talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Alkamalam and Squamish speaking peoples. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Intravenous. It is just me at the moment in the studio. Robin will be joining a bit later for a discussion on what the slogan hashtag no excuses mean in regard to gender-based violence and body autonomy as we approach the start of the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, which will be starting on Monday, the 25th of November. But today, since it is Transgender Remembrance Day, we thought that it would be appropriate to air an interview that I did about 2 months ago now in regard to gender-affirming care and the backlash against the SOGI resources, which is the sexual orientation and gender identity. That was seen and we're still seeing across Canada. So this interview is with Marnie Panas, who is a two-spirit LGBTQIA plus activist that's based in Alberta. And she had a really significant platform and influence on giving the community more visibility and a voice in federal legislative changes. So we'll have that interview coming up as well. But I just wanted to give a bit of background on Transgender Remembrance Day first. It is a day that highlights how transphobia combined with sexism, poverty, racism, and colonialism has continued to disproportionately impact racialized, two-spirit, trans, and gender diverse people, and particularly trans women of color. Now, there are events that will be going on today. For students at the Burnaby SFU campus, there is an event in the sub ballroom from 11:30 to 2:30 today in honor of Transgender Remembrance Day. And it also comes alongside Transgender Awareness Week, which helps raise visibility for transgender people and address the issues the community is facing, particularly hate violence, which is being experienced, and there is an increasing number in rates of violence and harassment experienced. However, there is also not a way of accurately knowing that number because many go unreported, and there is a strong issue of the identity of murder victims often being misreported or misgendered, which is seen in the case of Rita Hester, which Transgender Remembrance Day sort of came from in the aftermath of her murder in, I believe it was Boston. And there are many projects going on that I would suggest people taking a look at today, which is the Trans Murder Monitoring Project, which is monitoring and collecting and analyzing reports of homicides of transgender and gender non-conforming people globally. And they have been collecting data since about 2009. And just reporting on the trends and the patterns that we're seeing. Alongside this, there is also the A4TE Anti-Violence Project, and they have a Trans Remembrance Project 2, which is where they have data on transgender deaths from the 11th of January last year until the 31st of October this year, alongside a memorial and names list. So I strongly suggest checking those out today and having a look through it. But before we get into the interview that I did with Marnie Panas, I thought we would have a song to start off this morning. So this song is called Smile. It is by Shea Diamond. I have played it before on Intravenous, I think back in August, but it is a song that is by a transgender artist who advocates really for transgender rights through her music. And when you read about her background, it's a very interesting background of her communicating her journey kind of through her song lyrics, as well as her experiences with police and being in prison. So I hope you guys all enjoy this song, and then we'll have the Mani Panas interview coming up right after.
Breakdown. 10 years in the lockdown. Now I'm looking at lakes now. I dry my tears with old rags and lyrics. Not trying to hear it. Stop messing.
On average, every 6 days, a woman in Canada is killed by her intimate partner. The women in our communities deserve to feel safe from both emotional and physical abuse. They deserve men who control their anger. Most importantly, they deserve to know the people they love most will never hurt them. Men like me stand up to create a safer world for the women in our lives. And we're looking to men like you, the men who make up our communities, to join us. You can play an active part to end violence. Visit www.whiteribbon.ca.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Rebecca, the public affairs intern here at CJSF 90.1 FM Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. And today I'm joined by, very excitingly, by a guest, Mani Panas.
Hello, everybody.
Yep, and we are going to be talking a bit about her work in driving for change for the Two-Spirit LGBTQIA+ community and getting her insight on some of the issues from the community and what they're facing in British Columbia. So could you tell us a bit, Marnie, about who you are and what you sort of have done for the community?
Oh, sure. So my name is Marty Panis. I use she and her pronouns. I'm really excited to be speaking to your audience. Now, I'm not as familiar with BC because I'm Alberta. So I'm an Alberta girl. So I've lived in Alberta most of my life. And so as a transgender person, a transgender woman, I transitioned about 10 years ago in life. And through most of my work before and after has been about removing barriers for people to access society and all the services of society, particularly was in healthcare back in the day. And so a lot of my work now has been around inclusion for LGBTQ plus people in community, in health, in the workplace, in sport, in all the places where we exist already, but maybe not as openly or as safely as others. So that has included over time, I've worked with the Alberta government back in the day, the NDP government, to help add gender identity and gender expression to Alberta's Human Rights Act. I did similar work at the federal level and provided input and testimony to the Senate when Bill C-16 was eventually passed that would add gender identity and gender expression to Canada's Human Rights Act and the Criminal Code of Canada. Worked with the Prime Minister and his office on developing the apology that was delivered by Prime Minister Trudeau to LGBTQ+ people in Canada in the House of Commons a number of years ago, and then informed a lot of the policy and the response from that apology in terms of resources and infrastructure and stuff like that. So that's what I do kind of on my volunteer work. And by day, I'm also a Canadian certified inclusion professional. I've dedicated the last 20 years of my life to creating safe and inclusive spaces in community, in healthcare, in the workplaces for everybody who may not be, who may experience barriers to do so.
Wow, that's some incredible work that I would definitely say is very important work. I did read a bit about how you worked on the apology from the Prime Minister. Mm. I think it was like back in 2017. And I wanted to know, like, how did it make you feel knowing you were contributing to that change and having such a role in the like significant acknowledgement in the oppression that the community was facing?
Yeah, and I should provide some context to that. It was the oppression that members of the community were experiencing for decades as a result of federal policies and processes and legislation, including the purge, including people who were terminated from employment, whether it's in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the federal service, or the military, because of by their identity or sexuality, or even the assumption of said sexuality or identity. And so when I was invited to participate in the committee that helped draft that apology, I quickly understood the enormous responsibility that I had. Now, I had not experienced those things at the hands of the federal government, and that was not my journey. And at first, I thought, am I the right person even to be part of this? And so it was because I even asked that question that I think my community said, yeah, you know, we want you to be part of that. So I made sure the first thing I did was just ask the community, you have one chance to say something to the Prime Minister, to what do you want to hear? And so I was able to gather that feedback from, you know, hundreds of people across the country, and then to be able to turn that into words, that to sit in the gallery listening to our Prime Minister say those words out loud that we helped put together, watching the reactions on the faces of the people who waited a lifetime to hear those words, was probably one of the most profound experiences of my life, and is something I will not forget. And I think an apology like that matters deeply to the people who need to hear it.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, you've kind of answered my question already. I was going to say, what do you think was the most significant or rewarding experience in your career? But from the way you speak, I would assume it would be that one.
Well, I think that's one of them. I think, you know, when I look at a broader sense, it's, and I was just thinking about this earlier today, was how I define success is about having real meaningful impact on the lives of the people around me, people in my community and in the broader community. And that was one such moment. I've had many privileges in my life to work in environments and sit at tables that many people don't get to, and to have an impact you know, a say and input into something that would have meaningful impact and improve the lives of people around us. And that's, I think it's more of a general theme of what in my career is the most meaningful piece. Mm-hmm. That's one example of many places I've been able to sit at those kinds of tables. And I don't take that for granted.
Mm. Yeah. To be able to being the person that you are and to be able to have this role sort of in society, what inspired you to go into LGBTQIA plus activism and to really want to activate for the change?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I don't think anybody sets out in their life and saying, this is what I want to do when I grow up, right? You know, it's like, I didn't go to school for any of these things. It's sometimes these journeys find you. And you know, I've always lived a life of following the road that lies before me and how it's laid out wherever it goes. And in really, you know, and being there in all of those moments. And that started years ago, you know, 18 years ago when my boys were born in healthcare and a neonatal intensive care unit, being born very sick, very tiny, and spending 5 months living in that NICU with my boys. My son Andrew passed away at 4 months in my arms. And there's something about taking your care of your critically ill children and with my son, you know, taking his last few breaths in your arms, that teaches you something about living life without regret and embracing every gift that comes to you every single day. And that has been an important part of my my existence, is to really recognize that and honor that. And so that was probably what's, you know, really shaped my values, or helped to shape my values, and understanding that, you know, other family members weren't, you know, give, you know, did maybe had more barriers than we did in the unit, despite all the challenges that we had. So that started my inspiration of working in healthcare. And then as I transitioned and started to live my life truly as the person I was always meant to be, I remember one time mom came up to me and said, you know, my child is going to school and they just want to go to the bathroom, and the school board is not letting them go to the bathroom that they want to use. They have to ask for permission, go to the teacher's lounge, and they're in kindergarten at the time, like they're a young child, and ask me for help. And sometimes saying no just isn't an option. And so, you know, that really started to introduce me to, it's easier to stand up for other people than it is for yourself. And that was one of those moments where I was able to stand up for this child and, you know, bring media into it. And I started to realize, oh, you know what, I have a voice and people pay attention to my voice. People listen, people trust me. And I started to understand that that comes with significant responsibility. And it was that's when things started to really expand, and I started to use my voice, my privilege, my platforms to advance inclusion for the people around me that may have not found themselves in those positions.
Yeah, and I think that's so important, is the people that have the voices and have the ability to speak out can speak out on behalf of everybody as well. Like, part of the program, the Out in Schools youth program that's here in BC, is they are advocating this new initiative called The Future is Queer. And it is about creating a safe space that young people can go to be heard, be understood, to learn about what they're feeling, and that it's okay. And that as well, to bring their parents along with them is like something they're implementing, so that their parents can understand what's going on and that their parents can be a part of the journey too. So to be able for them to use their resources to create this space for everybody is like something that I find is so inspiring, when it's, you see people having who have the voice and who have the ability to do something, do it for everybody.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the one thing I would challenge, though, I try really hard, maybe I don't always succeed, is I don't pretend or try to speak on behalf of anybody else, but my own experiences, my own stories. What I hope to do by sharing my own experiences and stories, that it provides space for others to find compassion, empathy, some human connection with me, and maybe by extension to people who I connect with as a trans person, as a queer person, right? And then also, probably even more importantly, as I've, you know, aged in my career and I've found even a greater platform, and I've found some, you know, professional successes, services is that it is really important for me to be visible to youth, and particularly the parents of those youth that you just spoke to see somebody who's professionally successful, who's living life fully and joyfully, who's in love, who does, you know, shows that, you know, I deserve to be loved like anybody else. All of those things provides hope to youth who are trying to find their way, and maybe to parents who might now think that, you know, that is a possibility for them as well. And so I think that's probably the biggest gift that I can give now in my career, is my visibility and just being me and visibly, proudly, boldly me.
And I think that's so important, is to show yourself with no shame. It's like, this is me. You can like take it or leave it. Like, I'm proud of it. I wanted to talk to you a bit. I don't know how much you are aware of the Soji backlash in BC.
Well, I'm aware of the backlash to many conversations about Soji, sexual orientation, gender identity and expression work, whether it's work in schools and in society and healthcare. So whether it's in BC or Alberta or across the country or around the world, I'm certainly very familiar with the common threads and themes that are really challenging the rights of people to exist freely as who they are. So, you know, I can speak to it from that perspective.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. So just like for the people that are unaware, Soji 123 in British Columbia is an inclusive education initiative for sexual orientation and gender identity, with its aim to be making education a safer and more inclusive space for all students. And it provides educators with the guidance and tools they need to make this inclusive and safe environment in schools. And so I wanted to ask you, why do you think an initiative like this is so important for young people in particular to have access to?
It's so important for children, for youth to be educated in all aspects of humanity and all the ways that we are different from each other, the same from each other. When we try to hide certain aspects, then we're sending a message to these students and youth that there's something wrong, that there is something dangerous or what have you. And, you know, the fact is we all have pronouns, we all have sexuality. You know, are we going to stop, if we're going to talk about sexuality and gender, does that mean that, you know, any book, even with a hetero and straight couple, are going to be excluded? Because guess what? That's sexuality and gender.
Yeah.
And so what makes me nervous is when we start to limit children's exposure, they're going to find it in other ways. And the other ways may not be nearly as healthy. And then they go on, you know, knowledge is so important to a community like this. And it's important for them to see themselves reflected in their education. You know, some people will call it a slippery slope to other things. And I'm thinking, you know, what's next? Compassion, love, acceptance? Because that's what we're teaching when we're teaching how, you know, differences, and how, you know, it's important to recognize that those differences are seen and valued and appreciated in all the ways that we're different from each other.
Yeah, and from what you've said about like the fact that people are so scared of what it's going to lead to, I think is like one of the reasons like there's so much backlash against it. Because people are so scared of like, oh, what is this going to turn into? Like, first we do this, then what? It's hard to understand why. I mean, it might be just because of like, I know like back home from my age, we have more of an inclusive education than say my parents did. But I find it so hard to understand why there's such severe backlash against it, particularly from people up in power and people higher up in authority.
Because often they, you know, they're fearful of what is different. And I would say for the people who, some of the people who I think about who are in these places of authority, particularly in who aspire to be government leaders, are more often concerned with how they get to power and hang on to power than the cost of that. Because when we're thinking of the community that we're talking about, we're talking about a very small community. Most of the people who are experiencing this backlash will never be impacted by any of these things anyways. So, yeah. Right? So I think often people are afraid of what's different than them. And then, you know, if we provide equality or even a notion of advancement for somebody else, that is a threat to people in positions of power. That's a threat to people thinking, well, if we give other people more, that means I have less. And that's terrifying for people who've been used to generationally being in those positions of power. And that threat is really scary, whether it's a threat to, you know, political power, social power, all those different places where they find themselves in those positions of power. And I think that threat is what's scary for them.
Mm. And I'm going to say that the reasons that you've just spoken about there could be an explanation as to why the SOGI resources are not implemented everywhere in Canada. They're implemented in quite a few places, but they're not in every province. So I would say that there's maybe some provinces. So, for example, it's not in the East Coast. I believe it's implemented pretty much everywhere except Ontario. And I find it quite interesting that certain provinces are saying no when a lot of provinces are saying yes to at least having the resource package.
Yeah, and, you know, I was part of the work when the gender identity and gender expression was added to Alberta's Human Rights Act to be part of the education guidelines for Alberta education to support schools in having these conversations. So I was very much part of that work. And again, what we're teaching is how to interact with each other. And the impact of that is people feeling respected. Experiencing dignity in their school, being able to show up fully in their education environment and bring their best selves as a student. I mean, those are the outcomes that we're talking about. That, and for some reason, that is a threat to people. And I think part of that is, you know, I can share it from a trans person's perspective, is that we're a very small population, very small, you know, 1% of the population or less, and we're an easy target. And it's easy to dehumanize and villainize people like me. You know, honestly, Rebecca, here, you know, we're talking, particularly in the political world, you know, people are looking for access to healthcare and can't find doctors. You know, doctors are leaving. They're scared of the interactions or government having conversations with their getting involved in conversations between the healthcare provider and their patient. We're experiencing climate change and the impacts of climate change all over. The wildfires that have occurred in Alberta were amongst the worst in our lifetimes. You know, access to jobs, and we just heard job numbers here in Alberta rising, the unemployment rates rising to the highest in the country. All of these things are happening, and we're talking about pronouns in schools. And it boggles my mind. And so often, you know, what I'm seeing is that if we're talking about this population, then we're deflecting from all the real things that are and the big things that are impacting all of the population. And so often, again, we're an easy target to deflect away from the real issues that impact everybody.
So you're seeing it as like you're being used as like a distraction away from the bigger problem. Well, not the bigger problems, but the other issues that are in the, like, say, the province or something. You're the easy target to be a distraction to, like, fire a load of media attention at.
Oh, absolutely. I've spent more time in media talking about pronouns than talking about access to healthcare.
Mm.
Right? And that should tell you something. And that's what really makes me nervous because, we're deflecting away from all those other issues because we're a real, you know, easy target.
Yeah.
And you know, and hiding behind this notion of protecting children and parental choice and thinking, you know, everybody gets behind that. Of course we're gonna protect children. But the reality is we're going to harm far more children by implementing some of these things or taking away, creating solutions to problems that simply do not exist.
Yeah. And I know like over here there's been a lot of from like the past year, fake sort of news and claims that have been made that have like just grabbed headlines with just like a fake claim taking it. Like one of them was that the gender affirming care surgeries were taking up too much hospital resources for urgent and like necessary surgeries, like spinal surgeries. And then like there was a newspaper that fact checked it and went, actually they take up a very small percentage if you look at the statistics, but it's the fact that that claim went out and just grabbed the headline straight away.
And I'm surprised that, you know, for the people that were fact-checked, I don't think that would even matter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we even look as far as the Olympics this year and the boxer that was vilified in the media. It was amplified by all these people in platform for, you know, for the gender of this person and trying to shame this person, trying to say that she's not the person that she is, not the gender that she is, all these things, all based on lies. And even when the truth came out, that didn't matter mm-hmm. because she still didn't fit into what, you know, society expects a woman should look like. And the misogyny and the sexism that's behind that hurts all women. It hurts all people when we start to live with that. But people, you know, want to believe something, so whether it's true or not, to prove a narrative. And that is really dangerous.
Mm. And it's so interesting as well, because even when it's fact checked and when the truth comes out, that truth never makes the headlines as much as the fake claim made. And there's not a much, like, you only remember the fake claim, because by the time the truth comes out, the story's trickled away. And it's like, will be like one small, like little article maybe that comes out about it. And most people won't know the truth of the claim. They only know about the fake claim.
And we talk about that in the inclusion.